Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD's continuing 2017-2018 preseason. This is one of our favorite nights of the entire preseason as we are simultaneously recording three podcasts. We are recording the Atlantic 10 preview, which you are watching right now. Right below us, we've got the Mountain West.
Yep.
Below that, we've got the West Coast. And if you really, really are a big fan of Hoops HD, go hit play on all three of them right now, and you can watch all three at the same time.
You can watch all three at once. You can.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined off to my side here by David Griggs. Down below, Matt Sikowski, John Stalica as well, off in the other corner there. This is our Atlantic 10 preview. And I guess, David, let me start right at the top of the Atlantic 10. You're very high on this team. I'm high on them as well. Last year, made the NCAA tournament after a lot of near misses. They back there again this year, and we're talking about Rhode Island.
Yes. Again, they kind of got in, and they won the automatic bid, and based on the seed line they got, it would have been really, really close. I'm not so sure they would have gotten in without it, but they played really well down the stretch, won their game in the round of 64, went in against Oregon, and it was one of the more exciting games of the entire tournament. I don't think it's one of the more memorable ones because it wasn't in the Elite Eight or the Final Four, but they led Oregon for a good amount of that game and really were in a position to win it. They looked really good, and then we saw what Oregon ended up doing. They return a lot from that team. I think they're going to be even better this year, and I think they're a top 25 team. I think they're going to be in the rankings at the end of the year and probably for a good portion of the year. I know both polls are out now. I know they're not in them, but I don't know how close they are to being ranked. But this is one of the 25 best teams in the country. And the only thing that's going to work against them is they don't really have the chance to take on that many heavyweights. I mean, they got a lot of middleweights. Their profile will be good enough, but as far as playing their way up the seed line, I just don't know if they'll have the opportunities to.
Well, we're talking about schedule. Let me head over to you now. They do have, I see, obviously they have their annual contest with Providence.
That's a great rival. Oh, that's going to be great this year. Are we looking forward to that, the Ocean City rival?
But it's been several years since Rhode Island has had the upper hand as far as Providence. But they're also going to have a pretty good shot at the NIT season tip-off, where they'll face off against Seton Hall and either Vanderbilt or Virginia in the following game. They also have a pivotal game at Nevada. Then they go to Alabama in December. And other notable under-the-radar teams they'll host will be UNC Asheville, Charleston, Iona, and Florida Gulf Coast. So they schedule pretty smart.
Yeah. Let me ask you, that's turning into one of our favorite rivalries, isn't it, Chad? The Providence Rhodey game.
Oh, yeah, that has been a really fun game here the last few years, and I think it could be one of the better ones this year with how good both those teams, I think, are going to be this season. Matt, the problem, I guess, with Rhode Island is the front court. Hassan Martin's gone, Karrant Iverson's gone. How do you make up for that?
That's hard. You had a kid, Cyril Lavengine, I believe, probably butcher his name a little bit. He started to come on toward the end of last year, but I think they're going to have to be more of a perimeter-focused team. I mean, you got all their guards back, Jared Terrell, E.C. Matthews, Jarvis Garrett will be healthy, Jeff Dowden-Looker is a freshman. They might even have to go to some four-guard looks at times because those are four of their best players, but I think he'll manage it, but I'm not quite as high as David on them. I think they're a tournament team. Maybe they'll wear white. I think it'll be close, but not top 25.
Well, I think where maybe the advantage that Rhode Island have is if you look up and down the Atlantic 10, it really is a guard-heavy league, especially this year. You're seeing a lot of great backcourts, and I don't know if they're seeing that many great frontcourts.
No, that is true. This is where if you're there with a league like the Big Ten, SEC, ACC, one of those leagues, they have more frontcourt-heavy, they'd be in some trouble. In the A-10, they might get away with it a little more. But then come March, you see – Northwestern or something like that. I think realistic first round games that might, but something like that where if they face a strong front court team in the first round or maybe second round, that can knock them down.
Well, David, beyond Rhode Island, I know you're kind of high on the St. Bonaventure team this year.
Yes, right? I am. I think two get in, and those are the two. Okay. I like St. Bonaventure.
Again, you're talking.
Oh,
about
wait, that's not till the end. I'm sorry. Like again,
you're talking about another guard-heavy team with Mobley and Adams, especially. They haven't been to the Big Dance since 2012. You think that this is a tournament team, though, correct?
Yeah, I do. And again, in 2012, they got in with via the automatic bid after a rather unspectacular year. I think they were either on the 13 or 14 line, but I think they're inside the bubble this year, and I don't recall them ever being inside the bubble. They were on it 2 years ago, arguably got snubbed, but this year I think they get in.
You have to go back to 1999, the last time St. Bonaventure was in at large, because I want to say Tim Wynn and who were the other guys? Not maybe it was Marcus Green, but this was when Jim Barron was still head coach at the Bonnies.
Well, Sleeka, while I got you up on the screen here for a second, as far as their schedule goes, I believe they're playing an event that starts with a game with Maryland, but I'm not certain what else they really have there on the schedule that's going to scream for those non-conference wins. And I don't know how you pick them up in conference either with you know, the A-10 not being on the level of like the American or one of the power conferences.
Well, as part of the Emerald Coast Classic, they're going to play Maryland in the first round, and then they would play either TCU or New Mexico as far as the next game. But they're also going to have quite a few road games, which should also help some of their power ratings. They're going to be playing at Siena, at Buffalo, at Canisius, and they'll also be playing at Syracuse in mid-December. So those are all winnable games, but I'm not sure the Bonnies win all of them.
How did they end up with all three of the Big Four games on the road? I thought that there was like – I know that those four always play each other, but it's just odd that they're all on the road.
Yeah, they crazy. Do Niagara at home.
Okay, yeah.
The Big Four. It's Niagara. That's the four.
Oh, so okay. Yeah, Siena. My bad. All right. Pay attention, Chad.
Yeah. Well, David, you got to know your rivalries here. Come on. Matt, let me ask you, beyond St. Bonaventure and Rhode Island, how about this St. Louis team this year? This was a team that lost 21 games last year. Does have a head coach that's trying to rebuild it after whatever happened there the last few years before.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, Jim Cruyff could not build upon what the foundation Rick Majerus laid. But now you got Travis Ford in there, who has had some success in all different levels. And now at SLU, I was interested about that hire, but man, that first recruiting class, you got two kids at high major schools all over in Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French. He's got some nice transfers. Let's just see how things come together. We might be a year premature talking about them at this level of the A-10, but on talent, they might be there. Just if it meshes, hey, and this is a wide-open year out, I think, after Rhode Island. So who knows? Maybe in the end you see them a second or third in their year or two ahead of schedule and get in the tournament.
Well, yes. Well, Matt, do you have a second-place team? Is it the Bonnies? Is it St. Louis? Or is it someone else?
It actually, for me, is someone else, and it is okay. Davidson.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I know. Everyone, because Jack Gibbs is gone, but everyone else is back, and they have a really good recruit, Kellen Grady, who was in the top 50-some ratings. And then I think he'll kind of slide right in. He's also a combo guard, so he'll slide right in. You've got Peyton Aldridge. I think the kid, John Axel Gunmanson, I believe.
Yep.
Is that, yeah. He had a nice freshman year. I think he takes another step up. And that, and I love Bob McKillop's a great coach. And Bob,
this is the year for Iceland, especially for players like Gudmundsson.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that, and plus, well, you tell me if a league is open, I'm going with a guy who I know is a really good coach. And
the one thing about Davidson is that they've just, to me, looked so poor on defense typically. Now, Bob McKillop's a great coach. They've certainly been a force in the Atlantic 10 since joining it. It wouldn't surprise me if they had a big year and got to the tournament. I'm not going to pick it, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did. But what do you think of them defensively, Matt? That's always just been a little bit of a hang up of
yeah, they're a little better on the offensive end of the court, but I think, hey, like, I think that hurts more if you have a weak front quarter like Payne Aldridge, who's amazing on one end and not so great on the other. And that, but I think this is a league you can get away with that a little bit, and then, yeah. come March, if you try to out-firepower, because I think they'd be like in a 6-11 game, I'm thinking the 16's talent will probably go, and they might blast it by 15 in the tourney. But I think in the A-10, they can go, and they'll outscore enough teams to get the 12-13 wins they'll need to be an at-large.
I'll also be curious to see how Davidson does in the Diamond Head Classic. They play New Mexico State in the first round of that one. Then they would play either Hawaii or Miami in the second game.
Yeah, the Diamond Head, what Christmas is all about.
I'll tell you that the thing I like about Davidson is, you mentioned Peyton Aldridge. He scored 20.5 points and 8.2 rebounds a game last year, and that was with Jack Gibbs scoring 22 points on top of that. You take away Jack Gibbs's 22, Aldridge could be pushing 25, 26 points a game, which could be among the best nationally and could put him into the Conference Player of the Year discussion, or maybe even on top of it. So that's where I'm kind of I kind of can see it happening with Davidson, but again, I am very concerned about the defense, just like David said. David, who else do you think? Is there anybody else up there that you think could contend for a tournament bid?
Yes, okay. And it's the same team that I pick every year, and I still haven't learned. I like Richmond again. okay. I don't know. They unveiled their uniforms today, and I really don't like those that they're going to be wearing in the first night. They've got the spider on them and the number, like no logo. But I don't know. I like that they have they return two pretty good backcourt players of the guards play that both average double figures. Their names escape me. I don't know.
Ford just got hurt. He's going to be out for a little while.
Okay, I did not know that. But, like, once he's back, and I like Chris Mooney, and, again, I don't know why. This is always a team that I think should be better than what it is, and I'm always predicting them to do better. I'm not picking them to get into the tournament, but I think that they're going to be around third or fourth in the conference, and it wouldn't surprise me if they got there.
Of course,
I say this every year about this same team.
One of the notable players they're going to have to replace is going to be TJ Klein. And if the name sounds familiar, he is the son of former WNBA star Nancy Lieberman Klein.
Well, Stalika, let me stick with you here for a second. We have now talked about, I think about five or six teams here in the A-10. One team we have not mentioned is VCU. Now that Will Wade is gone, they brought in Mike Rhodes, who's another former Shaka assistant, so we keep Havoc there. Can VCU bounce back and get back in the field?
I know it's kind of dangerous to go by our exhibition games, but if you saw our page, they got drubbed by in-state foe Liberty. That's not a good sign for a team that's going to be reloading.
Yeah, Matt, where are you on this VCU team?
Not real high. And then I don't know how, like, I really like Matt Norlander as a writer, but I don't know how he had them in the 50s. And that I think they might be sub 100. And they're like, I think losing both Jaquan Lewis and Mo Alie-Cox, that hurts. Darianton Jenkins was a big time pickup when they got him. They need him to play like the top hard recruit he is and some more. But like, I just don't see with that roster. I think they'll be wishing Marcus Evans was eligible by about November the 20th.
Yeah, I mean, you got Justin Tillman there. I think he's a big time player, but I don't know that they've got enough other pieces with them, like you said. David, another team we have not mentioned. How about Dayton? What happened to them? Archie Miller's gone, and there's nothing left.
Yeah, that's what happened to them. Dayton had an incredible 4-year run, 4 straight NCAA tournaments, 4 straight at large bids where they were inside the bubble, albeit 1 year barely. But they got they didn't get out of the round of 64 the last 2 years, but it's been an incredible run, and I just think that they're reloading a little bit. I like Anthony Grant. I know that he didn't do as well at Alabama as many were expecting, and I'll include myself in that, but he didn't do poorly. Alabama was still better once he left than they were before he got there. He routinely won 20 games a year. He routinely had them in the postseason. He only made one NCAA tournament, but it wasn't great, but it wasn't awful. And I could see him doing very well at Dayton. VCU, a team that we just talked about, he was instrumental, along with Shaka Smart and really building VCU up. In fact, he was the one that got them into the NCAA tournament as 11 seed and got them what I think was their first win against Duke. So he kind of got that thing started. I think he's going to bring Dayton back, but this year they just don't have the personnel at all. I think it's going to be a long, long year for the Flyers.
I thought that was Jeff Capel III that was their head coach when they beat Duke back in 2007.
No, it was Anthony Grant. Capel was there right before that.
All right. Well, Matt, one other team that we have not discussed that's that some people are picking as potentially being able to make a run at a tournament is Phil Martelli's spot there in Philly at St. Joe's. The problem here last year, they were crushed by injuries, and they've already got some injury problems this year they're dealing.
Yeah, I think their best returning player was Charlie Brown got hurt, and that it's a sign. And there's still some talent there, but I haven't generally trusted them to get together. I know, as soon as you – Martelli's normally when he builds it, but I'm not totally buying it this year.
Yeah, the big question here is can they be – healthy enough with guys like Newkirk and Kimball and Oliva and Charlie Brown to get these to get into the field. And I agree with you. I don't know that they have enough traders on the staff to get there.
Yeah.
David, a couple of teams that are worth mentioning here in the Atlantic 10. Let's start with a little bit of an off-season story that happened. And that was at UMass, and where Pat Kelsey – was and was not their head coach. What happened?
Yeah, took the job. Really good coach. Done very well at Winthrop. Was certainly a good hire on the part of UMass. And I thought it was a good move for Pat Kelsey, and so did he, until about 24 hours later after he took it, when he announced he was returning to Winthrop. Now, I don't know if there were some personal issues going on with that. I'm a little hesitant to poke too much fun at it, but it was bizarre, and I think it really left UMass kind of in a tailspin after he had been there, after he had met the team, and, go through that and then decide that you're returning to Winthrop. It was kind of I think it kind of left them spinning in the wind a little bit.
Well, they did bring in Matt McCall took over.
Yes.
And he had done a pretty good job in Chattanooga the last couple of years. So they weren't left with nothing there. I think that McCall might be able to build something there, but it's going to be a few years. Sleek, before I get there, actually, Matt, you had a comment?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think with Kelsey, what happened, he just saw a UMass roster that had issues. I mean, and after this happened, Dante Clark, Rashad Gresham, and Dejan Giroux all transferred. And that they're apparently many off the court issues. I think this is similar to what Dan Altman went and then came back from Arkansas, the Creighton Arkansas back to Creighton. I think it's similar here where he just sounded like a mess of a situation, decided he'll take the PR hit, I'll go back to Winthrop and go again and try to find a better opening and not want to go. Because if you miss it in UMass, you're going way down the totem pole.
Chad, you might – I don't know if we can pull this up or not. One of the things I really like about UMass is this particular Twitter account.
I don't know if you can get that. You want to work on that while I return to Stalika to discuss another team with a new head coach. And that's Duquesne that brought in one of the winningest coaches in the entire nation in Keith Dambro from Akron.
Yeah, Dambrot was a regular 20-game winner at Akron, and – little bit of a surprise here that he's going to take the move over to Duquesne. I mean, Akron has had a lot of great teams, but you almost get the feeling he's kind of like Greg McDermott in some ways, that you always thought Akron was capable of more. But an environment like Duquesne, especially the recruiting area that is Pittsburgh and the nearby areas, this should be a fresh start. And will Duquesne make their first NCAA tournament since, I want to say, 1978 or 77. Give him a couple.
Not this year. Yeah. But back, I think he may be the guy that could do it. If anybody could do it at Duquesne, he may be the right guy. Matt, there's a few teams we haven't discussed. I'll quickly run through them. LaSalle, George Washington, Fordham, George Mason specifically. Anything you see in any of those four teams that gives you anything this year?
Well, LaSalle, at least, will be halfway entertained. You got a couple of high major transfers, Pookie Powell and BJ Johnson. probably not enough around him. The kid, and he's doing it, I think, to preserve his multiple eligibility. But Marquette Chance for Tracy Carter would actually fit nicely on that roster this year. But he's going to take a full year so he get two instead of doing just 1.5.
Yeah, George Washington, I would note, actually was surprising to win 20 games after everything that happened before the season last year. But now all the players are gone from that team also. Maurice Joseph is now the permanent head coach, no longer interim, but I don't know that he does much this year. And David, I know you're a big Fordham fan.
I think that with their slow, very, very slow progression climb is going to take a bit of a slide this year.
And we love the Neubauer hire. And
yeah, you know, love the Neubauer hire.
His third year, which is supposed to be the year you start putting things together, and I think it's going to be the opposite for him.
Right. But yeah, it's going to be a long year. But at least Fordham's trying somewhat. So,
And did you find that account there, David, or should we?
I can't seem to. I thought you had it penned, but it was. I just think it's UMassHoops.com or something like that.
But what they did was they noted how Pat Kelsey went for Halloween as a ghost, which
it was great.
But let me run through each of you then and ask you the question here. How many bids out of the A-10 and who's the champion? Stalika, let me start with you.
I'm going to go with two bids right here. I'm going to say Rhode Island wins the A-10 crown, and I will say St. Bonaventure gets the other bid.
Matt, you on the board of the two bids there?
I'm on board with the two bids. I think Rhode Island's the champ. They'll be like, I think, 7-9 seed range. But I'm going Davidson, Conference Player of the Year, Payne Aldridge. I think they make the tourney probably in somewhere like 11 seed to play in game range. But, yeah, they're my other tournament team in a kind of down year for the A-10.
Yeah, I'm going with Rhode Island and St. Louis as my two teams, with Rhode Island winning it. Sure. I do think the Bonnies are right there, though. It could be a three-bid league. I think if the Bonnies could be a play-in game type of team. David, let me end with you, as we always do.
I'm going with two, the Bonnies and Rhodey. And just kind of a final thought on this league. It is, outside of the Big East, it's the best basketball centric league, again, outside of the Big East. It's one of the only ones that routinely puts multiple teams in the NCAA tournament. It's in big markets. It's got some good programs. It has some not so good ones too. But like we say every year, Chad, why this league is underappreciated. It's underexposed. That's partly but not entirely due to a horrifically bad television deal. Why isn't this league more followed? Because, I mean, for people that are casual fans of college basketball, I don't think they understand that Dayton, Rhode Island all of a sudden slew, even when they're not that good. These are people that are packing 10,000 plus into their arenas.
Yeah, and it's going to be a shame this year when this kind of is a down year for the A-10. We're looking at it being a two-bid league when this conference, you know, can normally push three, if not four, teams in.
But DCU, great. Yeah, VCU, yeah, need, great DC, environment. Bonaventure, great environment. This is a good basketball league. Now, I think it's too bloated, as you know that. But again, like what you were saying, not to interrupt, why isn't this league more appreciated? It should be.
It really should be. And I think you're right, though. I think it is a little bloated. You got teams like, we didn't really discuss George Mason. You got teams like, Duquesne, maybe they're going to rebuild now, but you got some schools here, 14 schools. If this was a 10 school league, if they trimmed four teams out of here, I think you really would be having an Atlantic 10 conference with 10 members and a conference that could be right up there. But it is a fun league to watch. That there are some great rivalries here, and it is really a shame. You're right that it doesn't get the exposure that it deserves. But I guess on that note, on behalf of David Griggs off to my side there, John Stalika and Matt Sikowski down in the bottom row, I want to thank everyone for joining us. If you did not watch all three podcasts simultaneously, go hit those other buttons down there.
They're down there. They're down there. Right down there.
And we will talk to you again real soon.